Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Mark Munmaneer. He is Distinguished Professor of Geography at Syracuse University and the author of Lake Effect, Tales of Large Lakes, Arctic Winds, and Recurrent Snows. It was the winner last year of the Central New York Book Award in nonfiction. Professor Munmaneer is also the author of a number of other award-winning books having to do, one way or another, with cartography. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Grant.
Well, let me start. How did you get the idea and the desire to write this book about lake effects now?
Well, I have been working in the realm of the history of cartography for about the past two decades. And in the late 1990s, I in fact published a book on the history of weather maps. And at one point, when I was thinking about an idea of a paper to present at a conference, I thought it might be good to do something on the first map that showed lake effect snow. And when I did the book on weather maps in general, about the closest that I got to lake effect snow was including a few images of a radar map showing bands of lake snow coming off Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. In any event, when I started to look back for some examples, what I discovered was that earlier on, when meteorologists, climatologists began to map information about winter precipitation, there really was nothing. I had written a number of books about different things concerned with mapping. And I have a book concerned with gerrymandering. I have a book concerned with the history of meteorological maps. I have a book concerned with the Mercator projection. I have a book concerned with controversial place names on maps. So I had been used to sort of writing books on mapping. I started out on the Lake Effect Project with an eye for maps which could be relevant. I found a really intriguing history, a really intriguing story about the emergence of snow as a significant meteorological topic. And that by the same token, I also found an increased awareness of snow as a social problem. The whole history of urban snow plowing I found fascinating. It was related to the emergence of trucks, which were able to sort of deal with it, the recognition by city fathers that this was a municipal service that citizens wanted. And in fact, if they did not provide the service, you know, they might soon be out of office. In fact, there have been a number of cases where municipal governments basically sort of messed up. In the next election, the mayor was out of a job.
Before I first moved here to Syracuse, someone where I was living at that time and was familiar with the weather here kept emphasizing to me that the snow was mostly lake effect. He kept saying lake effect. And I can remember thinking at that time, so what? Who cares? It's snow. So when did the people who live in this area first realize that the snow falling here had something to do with the lake and that it was a relatively distinct phenomenon? When does that happen?
Probably not until the early part of the 20th century. Hmm. What I found, an interesting part of the story, is that there had been a number of books published on geography and climate. Nothing about lake effect snow. Some of these earlier writers pointed out that the lakes provided kind of a moderating effect because the proximity of this relatively warm water in winter and in the spring and in the fall tended to make conditions better for, let's say, orchards or in vineyards. It seems almost unconscionable that there was not much awareness. Now,
Was there a big turning point in the awareness? I mean, when was in the evolution of the understanding? Was there a moment when a big myth got busted, or some big breakthrough in understanding that you can point to?
probably not until the early 1940s, when basically meteorology had developed a better understanding of what was going on in the upper atmosphere. Mm. All of the information had been collected, you know, pretty much based upon surface measurements. So they were aware of the fact that we had cyclones, we had cyclonic storms. Even though they didn't call them that, we had Alberta Clippers. Now, as far as lake snow is concerned, only about half of this is actually lake effect snow that we have here. We do have nor'easters. We have snow associated with large cyclonic systems which originate down toward the Gulf of Mexico. But it's not true that most of our snowfall comes from lake effect. I mean, probably some years that would be true, but on average, it's about half lake effect snow and half what meteorologists refer to as synoptic snow.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse University Geography Professor Mark Manmanier, the author of the book Lake Effect. I want to talk a little bit about the snow itself. Lake effect snow seems to me to be fluffier and lighter than the snow that we get from the bigger storms that come across the area. Briefly, why is that?
It's because the amount of moisture in the snow is substantially less. Mm. And that's because it's related to the evaporation of moisture from the lakes. And it's moved into the area almost like a conveyor belt.
Why don't we have a lot of lake effect rain in the summer? Or maybe we do, and I just don't notice it.
Well, we do have lake effect rain, and it tends to be relatively gentle. It tends to be sort of like a very, very light shower. You have this pretty much in the areas that have lake effect snow.
During the summer?
During the summer.
Now, I associate, the grayness that we have here with the lake effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our summers here are pretty sunny, it seems. So tell me what the difference is.
We have great summers. But from time to time, you do have a situation. Actually, lake effect rain would be more common, let's say, in the fall. Mm. Now, there also is a tricky issue because sometimes the temperature might be hovering a little bit near the freezing mark. And several years back in October, the Buffalo office of the National Weather Service was quite embarrassed because in mid-October, they knew there was a storm coming in from Lake Erie. And they figured that, well, this is probably not going to be snow. And you did have, in fact, they'd forecast this as lake effect rain. And the problem was it was not rain, it was snow. And in some areas where you had a band which had the geometry, just like the bands that you get for lake effect snow, you had 2 feet of wet, heavy snow. And this was sort of unlike typical lake effect because of the time of year at which it occurred. The snow came in when air temperature was pretty near the freezing point, but it was below freezing. And in the area that received this, it was very unpleasant. Brought down tree limbs, power lines. Oh, it happened when a lot of leaves were still on the trees. So they caught the snow and the leaves came down and people lost power.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse University Geography Professor Mark Manmanier. He's a professor of geography at Syracuse University and the author of Lake Effect, Tales of Large Lakes, Arctic Winds, and Recurrent Snows. Now, in your book, you chronicle the different impacts that this kind of snow has had on the area over time. Is there one example that you found that most struck you or amused you?
Most amused me? Well, I guess one thing. We had 1 year where we got pretty close to the all-time record annual snowfall. The annual record is about 192 inches, set in 1993. And in this 1 year, we got up to just short of that by about 13 inches. Now, the following year, I decided, and when this was shortly before the book came out, that I would offer a course called The Geography of Snow. And it was intended for advanced undergraduates and graduate students. And one of the things that I wanted to put into this was a field experience. And the field experience involved students going out and looking at sidewalks and some of the controversy which had occurred in the area, which is sort of relatively longstanding about homeowners not shoveling their sidewalks. So the students worked up a very good plan for documenting whether or not people were shoveling at the appropriate times in accordance with the municipal ordinance. And the idea, you know, also to try to observe the extent to which pedestrians were forced to, or let's say felt forced, to leave the sidewalks because of one or two uncooperative residents and walk in the street. And the problem was we got very little snow. I mean, basically, we got about half of what was normal. And, you know, this bit simply points out that snowfall can fluctuate enormously from year to year. Now, the following year, I also offered the same course. And I figured, well, things have got to be a little bit better this year. And the annual snowfall that year was a little bit better, but some of it occurred before the term started. And then we got a fair amount of it during spring break. And this year, I didn't offer the course, and we're getting amounts of snowfall which are a lot closer to normal.
So now we know what the key is. You've got to offer that course every year. Yeah. You mentioned the pattern of getting more, getting less snow. What is the long-term pattern with lake effect snow? Is there one in particular? Are we getting more lake effect snow because of global warming or less or no effect?
This is a tricky issue. Lake effect snow is related to the movement of wind across relatively warm lakes in winter. And when there is a significant difference between the temperature of the lake surface and the upper air temperature, you're going to get a situation where evaporation occurs and you have clouds forming and so forth. With climate change, anthropogenic climate change, global warming, call it what you like, the lakes are becoming warmer on average. And this seems likely to increase the amount of lake effect snow because it's the temperature difference. If you have a situation where the lakes were substantially cooler, lake effect snow would be less common. Now, one of the reasons, let's say, why we had less lake effect snow during those 2 years when I taught the geography of snow is that the pattern of air movement was just atypical. So, I mean, that's another factor. Now, if you're looking at long-term forecasts, there have been studies that suggest that we're going to have, on average, increasing amounts of lake effect snow up through maybe the end of the current century, at which point there's going to be substantially less snow because, on average, it's going to be sufficiently warm that we're not going to have much snow.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is geography professor Mark Munmaneer, and we've been talking about his latest book, Lake Effect, which is about, you guessed it, lake effect snow. Another question about longer-term patterns, or maybe not longer-term, but how does lake effect snow interact with these polar vortexes? Is it synergy? Is it two different things?
The polar vortex brings down extreme cold. It really doesn't do a whole lot unless you get winds moving across the lake. So it's a question, you know, of the overall movement of air. you can get a situation, where we can get extremely cold weather. Extremely cold weather does not necessarily translate into snow. It doesn't necessarily translate into lake effect snow. When you have a polar vortex pattern, what you're more likely to find is an increased amount of synoptic snow. But a synoptic snow associated with nor'easters or cyclonic storms in general, that's much more common along the East Coast. So we've had some years, where you basically have some really catastrophic snowstorms down in the Northeast Corridor, Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Boston. And up here in Syracuse, virtually nothing.
And different weather prediction sources around here in this area, particularly television stations, make claims that they are the best predictors of lake effect snow and can tell you exactly where the band will be and where it will not. Is there one source that you think actually is the best?
Can I mention Channel 9?
Sure.
Okay. They have the advantage because they have their own radar. And they have their own radar, which is relatively close. Other radar towers, there is one up on Montague, up near Tug Hill. There's one over toward Buffalo. There's one south toward Binghamton. And by having a local radar, which is positioned on a hill, sort of looking down over Syracuse, looking down at the lake plain, which extends from Syracuse down toward the Lake Ontario shore, they are much better positioned to pick up lake effect snow bands. Now, the other radar tower is operated by NOAA. They are part of a national system, and they do give us a pretty good picture of lake effect snow generally. But if you're looking at what is called now casting, which a lot of people appreciate the fact that, it's nice to see that a map that they can view on television or on the TV station's website shows that, in fact, yes, it is snowing in my neighborhood. Mm. And now casting can also be extremely useful for observing trends. One of the tricky things about forecasting lake effect snow, if you can forecast accurately the direction in which the wind is blowing, you can basically pretty much tell, those areas which are likely to have snow. If the atmosphere, if atmospheric conditions are such so that that kind of forecast is a bit trickier, then forecasting lake snow can be much more problematic.
And in terms of prediction, looking toward the future, what do you think will produce the next big breakthrough, or is it that we pretty much know what we're going to be able to know at this point?
There's been a lot of interest in recent years in a fuller understanding of the structure of lake effect snowstorms. And this, I think, is going to provide a significant edge on being able to forecast maybe the relative amounts of lake effect snow that you're going to get at different parts of snow bands, and also in terms of, let's say, how far the snow bands are actually going to reach. So I think there are going to be some breakthroughs. But by and large, if you have a good sense of the direction which the wind's moving, and if you know differences between the upper air temperature and the lake surface, I think you can come up with a pretty good forecast.
And I have now a confession I'm going to make to you, and I guess I'm really asking for an intervention from you on this. You say in your book at the beginning that you've been living here for almost 40 years. I've been living here for a little over 20. I grew up in the D.C. area, and then I spent a lot of time in New England. I still hate the weather here. People talk about it being character building or just going along with it, but I find it relentless, and almost every year I get sick of it. So help me out here. Change my frame.
Well, if you like to read, that's helpful because, basically you don't necessarily have to go outside. If you enjoy winter sports, basically we are not that far away from Lewis County, which has some of the best ski country in the East. The weather here is a heck of a lot better, I would argue, than, let's say, places in the upper Midwest, places such as Minneapolis, where it gets a heck of a lot colder in winter. And, you know, then when you get up in that neck of the woods, you have blizzards. We might get a lot of snow, but basically a blizzard is a very different condition. Blizzard basically is defined as a dust storm with snow, where you get extremely strong winds. You don't have to get a whole lot of snow, but the wind can really move it about. Interestingly enough, by the way, in New York State, you know, you could go to Buffalo. Buffalo tends to get less snow than we do on average. But back in 1977, they had a very odd phenomenon occur, where basically a lot of snow had built up on the frozen surface of Lake Erie. Now, generally in Buffalo, when Lake Erie freezes over, that cuts off the supply of moisture, which is why Buffalo tends to have less lake effect snow than we do, because Lake Ontario generally was much warmer because it's deeper. We had an accumulation of snow on the shore, on the surface of Lake Erie, and some very powerful winds came along, and they basically moved that snow into Erie County, and you got some enormous snowfalls there, which were basically blizzard snowfalls. And they weren't really lake effect in the normal sense, aside from the fact that the snow came off Lake Erie. And that's one of the things that you probably have to worry about in Buffalo, which you don't have to worry about here.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Juggling. Teaching a full load of courses, being editor of something called Volume 6 of the History of Cartography, which is a million-word encyclopedia, trying to work with another book currently, which has been written and trying to get that published, and then starting a new project concerned with the history of patents, patents basically of maps and map-related phenomena. And, you know, then my wife and I, dealing with three cats and some of their health problems and all kinds of other stuff.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Saying yes far too often.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
When I originally started out, I was a quantitative geographer, and I was working basically on landforms. And at that point, I never would have figured that my career would sort of shift to the point where I was actually writing books on the history of mapping. I didn't write my first book until the 1980s, and I really find that's a lot of fun, but it's a different kind of academic work.
That was Mark Munmaneer. His book is Lake Effect, Tales of Large Lakes, Arctic Winds, and Recurrent Snows. Mark, thanks so much for talking with me.
And thank you very much, Grant.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest. You can also follow us on Twitter at Campbell Convos.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.